Welcome, everyone, to the new 1001 Sherlock Holmes Stories podcast. Here you'll find a collection of Sherlock Holmes adventures, as well as the best of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's stories. Some from our archives at 1001 Classic Short Stories and 1001 Stories for the Road, and some newly produced, all here for your entertainment.
Well, the heat wave continues, Watson. According to the latest weather report, there's no sign of it abating.
Well, I suppose after such a cruel winter, one should be grateful. It can't last indefinitely. Look here, Holmes. I have a young fellow working with me. He can take over my practice for a few days. Why don't we get out of London?
Get out?
Yes. The heat in the center of the city is insupportable. Let's hire ourselves a pony and trap, pack a few things in a rucksack, and take to the open road. Stay at inns, wherever we like, walk, swim, fish. Well, just relax and enjoy the sunshine. We both need to get away. This is an ideal time. What do you say?
Present the stories of Sherlock Holmes. Tonight,
David Rainsburg's will. Summer of 1886 was indeed one to remember. It was one of the hottest, driest times ever recorded for the month of May, and London sweltered. None of us was accustomed to such heat. While most of my patients continued to improve, a great number were suffering from heat fatigue. Of course, the trains to the seaside towns were crowded, but it seemed to me that the quiet peace of the open English countryside held out the best promise of relief. Sherlock Holmes loved London. In fact, I don't think he was really happy anywhere else. But he saw the sense of my argument and agreed to my suggestion. It was easy for me to hire a pony and carriage from the hostelry in Bickenhall Street, and so off we went. Our plan was to simply follow the country lanes through Hertford and Buckinghamshire. Now, you must admit, Holmes, that this is a splendid idea. Just look around. Wild roses are already out on the hedges. Birds are singing. The wild grasses shimmering on the banks each side of us. The cloud in the sky.
It is, of course, very beautiful.
Yes, downside better than those pea soup fogs and the bitter cold of a few months ago. Thank goodness all is peaceful here. I don't know about you, but I'm getting quite an appetite. Well, surely you must come across a country inn very soon.
Well, according to this map, we're some miles from a village called Little Sutton in the Wold.
Well, that may be it, down there. What a view. Shall we stop for a few minutes, Holmes? I could do with a breather.
Not very well. I'll take the reins later.
There. Whoa, oh, go. Oh, let's get down and stretch our legs. Well, certainly a great sight. An undulating patchwork of different colored fields stretching as far as the eye can see. Ah, golden corn and sweetest breeze bring peace and quiet to an English heart.
You wax very poetic this morning, Watson. I appreciate the tranquility of all that lies before us, but I do confess that to live amongst all this for very long would become unsatisfying. One needs mental stimulation.
Oh, I should have thought you had had enough of that to last a lifetime. And thank goodness we've escaped from crime and violence, at least for a short while. Personally, I've seen so much pain and suffering that I could cheerfully...
Some travellers are in a hurry. That road is quite narrow. It's got to be pulled off to the side. What was that?
Please, the driver's lost control. Get me to that horse. I saw the horse rear up, the carriage about to topple over. The driver lost the reins, and unless the animal was controlled, I knew there'd be a dreadful disaster. Instinctively, and almost like thinking, I threw myself forward, grabbing at the horse's head. On the bridle, turn on, My weight slowed him down. I was conscious of being dragged forward. There was a pain in my shoulder. My arms seemed to be wrenched out of their sockets. Suddenly, I felt a searing stab of agony. Mercifully, all went dark and silent.
How is he, Doctor?
He'll be all right. He's broken a few ribs. I don't like the look of those bruises. But if you ask me, he's been extremely lucky.
Should he be taken to hospital?
Oh, no, 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 no. He's a very strong man. Let him lie here in this comfortable room at the Dappled Duck. You have no immediate plans?
No, no. We were taking a country tour with no definite plans. As long as he's comfortable and in no danger.
Oh, no, 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 no. He's a medical man himself, I understand.
Yes, that's right.
Then he will know what attitude to take when he becomes himself again. Just leave him. Let nature take its course. I'll be at the village if you need me at all. Good day to you, Mr. Holmes.
Good day to you, Doctor. I'll show you out.
I was conscious of what Holmes and the doctor were saying, and strangely enough, in spite of the aches and pains, I felt quite peaceful. I may have been given some form of opiate. I can only remember feeling quite at ease, knowing that Holmes would take good care of me.
Come in.
Oh, excuse me. You are Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
That is correct.
My name's Mary Cook. I've come here to inquire into the condition of your friend who so gallantly rescued us this morning. My mistress and I were in the carriage that nearly overturned. I'd been sent from Rendsburg Manor to convey our grateful thanks.
My friend and colleague, Dr. Watson, is suffering from a few injuries, but I'm sure that he'll make a speedy recovery. Please, won't you sit down and discuss this whole matter? We were parked at the roadside when we heard a shot, and your horse was frightened into bolting. Can you tell me who was in the carriage at that time?
Just myself and my mistress, Miss Reva Lowe. Oh, it's all very distressing. You see, Miss Lowe and I have only just arrived in this country from South Africa. We were on our way to Rendsburg Manor. My mistress is an heiress and has been left the manor and all the estates in her uncle's will. Oh, what a dreadful welcome. Are you sure that Dr. Watson's all right?
Oh, yes, he's a very tough fellow. He'll pull through soon enough. Has anyone inquired into the shooting incident?
Why, no. I assumed it was someone shooting in the woods. Oh, what an unfortunate incident.
Yes. Particularly as the bullet from the gun ricocheted off the rocks on the bank where we were standing. I don't wish to add to your anxieties, Miss Cook, but I have the distinct impression that the shot was deliberately fired at either your carriage or ours.
Oh, but surely that cannot be.
Well, as you are strangers to this country, it would be unlikely that you should be the target of such an attack, and so...
You mean someone aimed at you?
It is quite possible. I am a man with few friends, but many enemies. Please do not distress yourself on my account. If this was not an accident, you may be sure I shall find out the true cause of it all. Well, thank you for calling, Miss Cook. Convey my respects to your mistress and assure her that all is well. Good day to you.
Within a couple of days, I was feeling more myself again. I'd managed to bandage up my chest to give support to my injured ribcage, but the comfort it gave me was offset by the heat it generated. However, I made progress. There was a goodwill note and a bowl of fruit from the ladies up at the manor, and an invitation to call upon them whenever I was able. For most of the time, I sat in the small back garden of the Dappled Duck Inn under the shade of the large oak tree. Sherlock Holmes disappeared for hours at a time. I was surprised, as he seemed cheerful and enjoying himself no end. Then, on the third day, he suggested a quiet drive up to Rendsburg Manor. The mistress of the house, Reva Lowe, received us graciously.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, how good of you to call. We've been so anxious about you, Doctor. Are you recovering from the accident?
Yes, I shall be myself again quite shortly. There's nothing to give concern.
Well, I think you're a very brave man, and we are much in your debt. May I introduce you? This is Harley Albright, our family lawyer.
How do you do?
Little Newman, the squire of Little Sutton. Mr. Robert Higgins.
How do you do?
Mary Cook, my companion in the carriage, you already know. She's just as grateful to you as I am. Mary, have we sherry and biscuits to offer our guests?
Yes. They're there on the side table.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Albright, I wonder if you'd be so kind.
But yes, of course. Allow me.
I do trust that things will settle down for you now, Miss Lowe. You have inherited these estates, I understand.
Under the terms of Uncle David's will, yes. I must say, I don't understand it very clearly. In these matters, I am totally in the hands of lawyers.
Well, as squire, I can state most definitely that you couldn't be better represented. Albright has handled my affairs with great skill for many years.
Mine too. Not that a hard-worked farmer like myself is a great deal to handle. And I've enough to do trying to make the land pay for itself.
I'm sure you manage admirably, Mr. Higgins. If the farmlands about here belong to you, then you've something to be proud of. I've never seen such a green land.
Oh, thank you, Miss Cook. I'd like to show you around them sometime, but I think we'd do better to start by calling each other by our Christian names, don't you?
Should we not take our refreshments into the garden? It's still so dreadfully hot. There are shady umbrellas under the trees. Can you manage, Dr. Watson?
Oh, yes, yes, quite easily, thank you.
Allow me to help you, Doctor.
And I, too, if I can be of any
assistance. I'd be getting back shortly. How about you, O'Brien?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I have a great deal to do. Perhaps a few minutes in the garden, then back to work. Papers to prepare, you know.
Well, that leaves us together, Miss Lowe. I understand you come from South Africa, a most fascinating land. What part do you come from? The Cape? Natal?
Natal. My family were amongst the early settlers. This is the first time I've been to England, actually. There's such a contrast.
Oh, that was a most agreeable visit, Holmes. I think Beaver Lowe and her maid companion are delightful. The Squire and Robert Higgins, too, very pleasant. A happy community. Pity we can't stay longer. But I'm quite able to travel.
No, Watson.
Huh?
I said no. You are incapable of enjoying a further holiday and reluctant to return to the heat of the city. I suggest we stay where we are.
But Holmes. Holmes, there's more to this than meets the eye. Now, just what are you up to? Why do you really wish to remain here in Little Sutton?
I wish to remain, Watson, because I know all is not happy. If I stay, I may put a stop to a miscarriage of justice. I may be able to prevent a murder.
I looked at Holmes in sheer amazement. I knew that he longed for the excitement of the city and his routine of continual investigation, but surely, here in the peace of the countryside, he had to be mistaken. But he was quite serious.
Oh, yes, I am quite serious. This isn't daydreaming on my part. You see, I've been wondering about that accident. It was caused by a shot from the woods on the other side of the road. It might have been an accident, or a poacher, a wild shot at a rabbit, something like that, but I don't think so. It was deliberately fired at that carriage. It could not have been meant for us. No one, not even Mrs. Hudson, knows we're here. While you've been lying down recovering, I've been making a few inquiries.
Oh, you mean into the affairs at Rensburg Manor?
Yes, I found that David Rensburg died under very strange circumstances. He was found dead after taking a jump whilst out riding one morning. He was alone and there were no witnesses. He was an expert horseman and had cleared that fence most days of his riding life. The horse was found grazing some mile away. Nothing wrong. It must have been an accident.
Well, these things do happen. Why should it arouse your suspicion?
Because he made a will. It was a most strange one. I cannot find out the conditions, but I think there's going to be some controversy within the next few days. I can spell danger, Watson. I'm a man who deals only in facts, not suspicions, but I smell danger.
I had learned never to take Sherlock Holmes' views lightly. He was a man who rarely wasted time, and if he felt the need to stay on down at Little Sutton, then I was quite agreeable. In any case, I was still in great discomfort, and it was easier to convalesce on the countryside than back in the city. But it was some days later before Holmes' fears were confirmed. Miss Reaver Lowe called at the inn, and it was in the early evening.
I'm sorry to arrive like this, Mr. Holmes, but I took a chance on the fact that you might still be here. May I talk to you in confidence?
By all means. Do take a seat.
Thank you. I hardly know where to begin. Well, the fact is, since Mary and I arrived up at the manor, things have not been as trouble-free as I should have liked. To start with, the terms of my uncle's will are very strange. They require that I shall stay at the manor for a whole year before the estates are legally mine.
Well, these things often take some time, but a year is rather unusual.
Yes, particularly because after that year I shall be required to prove my identity as being sound of mind and body.
Extraordinary. May I ask if there are any other clauses in the will? Should you not fulfill the conditions, who would stand to benefit?
That's the curious thing. No one else. I am the only relative, and so why all these strange conditions?
Yes. Well, if it's all legally drawn up, I don't see what can be done about it.
Neither do I. But that isn't all that's bothering me. The fact is, I don't wish to be overfanciful, but I have a feeling that it's a very unlucky house.
In what way?
Well, to start with, there was the accident with the carriage before I even arrived at the manor. And then, since then, several things have happened, even in this short time. The other day, Mary and I were out relaxing on the terrace, enjoying the sunshine. Oh, isn't this heavenly? so beautifully cool under the trees.
Yes, lovely. Oh, it's too hot for tea, don't you think? What about iced lemonade? There's some waiting. Oh, look, it's Sandy, your uncle's old tomcat.
Sandy?
I wonder if he misses his master.
Doesn't appear to. I don't think Uncle David liked cats very much. He must have been much more of a dog man. Let's give Sandy a saucer of milk. You're feeling thirsty, Sandy? I'd like some lemonade, please.
There we are, Sandy. That's nice, huh? Well, what are the rest of your plans for today?
Mr. Albright is preparing some papers for signing. He should be here in a moment. Then the Squire and Robert are coming for luncheon. Incidentally, I think Robert is becoming very attached to you. He talks of nothing else.
You must be imagining.
What is the matter? What's the matter with Sandy?
He seems to be having some sort of fit. Oh, I think...
No.
Oh, he's lying so still now. I think he's dead. Oh, no.
Of course, Sandy was a very old cat. He hadn't been well, and we were told that he was subject to fits, but the incident was upsetting. We naturally called the servants and retired into the house. The cat was dead and buried in a favorite spot in the garden. Well, I thought nothing more about the incident until noon today. It's been yet again another boiling hot day. Mary was about some duties in the house, and I borrowed her green and white parasol and stepped out into the garden. I wandered quietly across the lawns, returning to the house along the open terrace. I was happy, humming to myself, at peace with the world, when... Mary! Mary! Is that you up there? It was all over so quickly, Mr. Holmes. I was on the terrace when I thought I heard a sound from above. I looked up at the veranda, and then one of the heavy flower pots containing pink geraniums crashed down towards me. I just had time to jump aside before it broke into pieces on the tiles. There is no doubt that I could have been killed if I'd not moved quickly.
And this is the latest accident?
Yes, but now I am sure they're not accidents. There is someone trying to cause me bodily harm.
Yes, yes, indeed. You or another...
I beg your pardon?
No, it's nothing. I do agree with you, Miss Lowe. I think you have cause for alarm. In fact, I'm sure there is a vicious plot afoot up at the manor. With your kind permission, I should like free access to the house at all times, day and night.
By all means. I have spare keys.
But first tell me, the cat that died, did anyone think of examining the milk on that milk tray?
No. You mean you think it could have been poisoned?
Almost certainly. Tell me, who was in the house at the time?
Just the servants. We had guests to lunch, the Squire and Robert Higgins, both of whom you've met.
You find both men agreeable company? Did they pay you much attention?
Yes. I think they were both Uncle's friends, and they're doing their best to make us feel at home. The Squire is most attentive towards me, and Robert is more than anxious to look after Mary. In fact, he seems quite infatuated with her.
He does. Oh, that's very interesting. Well, let me gather a few things together and find out if Watson is agreeable to taking a trip to the manor. You have transport?
Yes, thank you. I have a cab. Thank you, Mr. Holmes. I need hardly tell you that I'd be most grateful if you'd keep this conversation to yourself. I don't want the others to know of my suspicions. Can it remain a secret between us?
Of course, but I think it's very important for us not to deceive each other. I'm a well-known detective, and I shall find out the truth sooner or later, and so...
So?
So why don't you stop all this deception and tell me the whole truth? Here and now.
Of course, I agreed to accompany Holmes up to the manor. He didn't bother to explain the circumstances to me. Both he and Reva Lowe were silent for the whole journey. Then, to my surprise, we didn't drive the whole way. Holmes stopped the carriage just outside the grounds.
Now, this will do nicely, thank you. We get off here, Watson.
All right, if you say so.
Here, Mr. Holmes. I think you'll need these keys. They are to the whole house. The largest one is the... Well, it's the old side entrance. That'll be the safest way in.
Oh, thank you. Remember all I have said, and good luck.
Thank you. I shall remember. Come on, boy. Come on. Come on.
Now, look here, Holmes. I'm accustomed to being kept in the dark about quite a lot, but I really must insist that you give me some information. How am I supposed to help if I don't know what's going on?
All will be revealed to you shortly, Watson. The fact is that I was right. There is a murder planned. So far, a few attempts have been made under the cover of an accident, but those have all failed, and I have reason to think that there'll be a more serious attempt made this very night. Come, we have a long wait ahead of us.
The lights were ablaze at the manor, flooding through the open windows and spreading across the lawns. It wasn't easy to approach the house without being seen. We dodged from shadowed tree to thick bush and eventually stopped near the side of the house. We waited, hearing voices from within. I could tell that the squire, Robert Higgins, and Harley Albright were all present. It seemed to be hours before the guests departed.
I'll call on you tomorrow, Mary, that's if I may.
Oh, yes, of course.
Good night, Squire Newman.
Good night.
Come on, dear, let's lock up and good night. Let's go to bed now. I'm really very exhausted.
It's the heat, I think. Oh, it'll be difficult to sleep tonight, even with the windows wide open.
Oh, listen, thunder. Well, a good storm may break the heat. Come on, let's lock up. Oh, it was a most pleasant evening, don't you think?
Come, Watson. The time has come to take up our positions. We enter by the side door and climb the servant's stairs to the bedrooms. Then I'm afraid it'll be yet another long wait. Come.
I followed Holmes, and we gained entrance to the house without being seen. To my surprise, Holmes chose to wait in the very small dressing room next to Mary Cook's bedroom. The two ladies were tired, and we heard movements as they prepared for bed. Then followed hours of waiting while the storm grew and the welcome rain began. I began to become cramped and irritable.
I fear the storm is not to our advantage, Watson. It could make all this a waste of time.
Have we not been cooped up here for nothing? Oh, Holmes, I'm in agony.
Listen. Someone is out in the corridor. I'm going to push this door open.
Holmes, this is Mary Cook's bedroom. Surely if there's danger, we should be guarding Reva Lowe.
Shh, quiet. Now, Watson,
get him. Right. Instantly, my cracked ribs and aches and pains were forgotten. I threw myself into the room. Mary Cook jumped from her bed, and Holmes and I grabbed at the man who loomed over her. He struggled manfully, but he was no match for the pair of us. Overpowered, with wrists tied behind his back, Harley Albright, the lawyer, glowered at us as Reva Lowe entered the room.
Just what do you think this means, Mr. Holmes?
It means that you will be facing a charge of attempted murder, Albright.
Mary, are you all right?
Yes, thank you, dear.
And the game's up, Albright. I knew there was something wrong from the moment these ladies arrived in this place. Incidentally, I think I'd better explain, Watson. The two of them changed places. This is really Reva Lowe. And this lady who posed as the heiress is a hired protector. You are a brave woman.
Thank you. It was a job. Reva approached me because she'd received a letter in South Africa from her uncle, saying that he thought someone was trying to kill him.
He was killed. By Albright's loosening the girth of his saddle before he went jumping. Then when you arrived, he set about trying to kill again. Only he knew the switch had been made, and the person he wished to kill was known as Mary, not Reva. The parasol you borrowed made him think it was Mary underneath the veranda. And that's why we guarded this room tonight. Watson and I caught him red-handed. It had to be him. It couldn't be anyone else. You killed to cover up for all the money you've been swindling out of the estate, isn't that right, Albright? Oh, yes. There's no need to reply. You'll have plenty of opportunities for that at your trial.
Listen again next Sunday to The Stories of Sherlock Holmes with Graham Armitage as Holmes and Kerry Jordan as Dr. Watson.
Might I inquire your movements today, Watson?
Oh, only my usual rounds in the Paddington area, Holmes. And now back here for lunch at the usual time. Surgery late this afternoon and some paperwork in the evening. Nothing very special. Why?
I've had a note brought round. It's extremely interesting. It reads, Sir Charles Druings will be pleased if you would receive him at your rooms in Baker Street at 2:30 this afternoon. It is a matter of national importance and extremely urgent. As it comes, as you can see, from the seal on the envelope, from the Admiralty.
Well, I think I understand. The matter will be secret and your meeting highly confidential. You'd like me to lunch in town and come back later?
No, not at all. I believe Sir Charles Druings is a very shrewd and devious character. I should very much like a witness to this meeting. You will be here to assist me.
We present the stories of Sherlock Holmes.
Lack of evidence.
Die goeie ou dae van Springbok Radio is terug. 20 onverkrygbare liedjies nou op een CD. Met al jou gunstelinge: Virginia Lee, Cora Marie, Anton Goosen, Sonja Herold, Cupido en vele meer. Herleef Springbok Radio, Afrikaanse treffers.
Flower Connection has just opened their flagship store in Linden, Johannesburg, at 65 on 4th, situated in 4th Avenue. For fresh-cut flowers, plants and florist accessories at wholesale prices, come to Flower Connection. Call Jenny on 076-951-9449 or visit our website at www.flowerconnection.com.
Sherlock Holmes was accustomed to dealing with government departments, but any assistance he was asked to give invariably came through the visits from his brother Mycroft. It was unusual to have a direct request from someone as high up as Sir Charles Druings. I went about my business and forgot all about the appointment. There were several difficult cases that needed hospitalization, and to my consternation, I found the morning had slipped away. Lunchtime had come and gone. And when eventually I got back to Baker Street, it was nearly 2:30. A carriage waited at the curb outside 221B. I let myself in and found Holmes seated in his favorite chair. Opposite him was a tall, distinguished-looking man of rather forbidding appearance. Holmes immediately made the necessary introductions.
How do you do, Dr. Watson?
How do you do?
I am pleased to meet you. But surely, Holmes, you must have understood that I intended this appointment to be strictly confidential.
Watson has been privy to almost every case I've ever handled, including the most secret assignments from my brother Mycroft.
Unfortunately, Mycroft is not in England at the moment. Were he so, I should doubtless have used him as an intermediary.
He would have welcomed Watson's assistance, I do assure you. You need have no fear of speaking freely in front of a most trusted colleague.
Well, very well. The fact is that I have an assistant at the Admiralty. His name is Robert Rivers. He lives quite near here in Upper Montague Street. Or rather, he did. The fact is that Rivers has simply disappeared. Can't be traced at all. He should have been in the office 2 days ago. He didn't turn up. No sign of him anywhere. We're very worried.
You think he may have met with an accident? Surely he has a family who would have known that.
Well, he has a wife. A very beautiful wife, years younger than himself. They appear to be estranged. Delicate matter. Impending divorce, I understand. Naturally, Rivers wishes to avoid that publicity, but that's not what disturbs me, Mr. Holmes. The fact is that for some time now, we've been aware that certain information has been passing from our office to foreign shores. As you know, we in Britain pride ourselves on our secret service, best in the world. information coming back to us leads us to believe that someone in the Admiralty has, to put it bluntly, turned traitor.
I see. And you suspect it's Robert Rivers?
It's a grave accusation, Holmes. I don't care to put it in as many words, but the possibility does exist. Recently, I've been watching Rivers. Only he and I have the keys to the safe where the codes are kept. It's top secret. The codes are continually changing. Now, I know that Rivers has been at work on certain papers. I'm reasonably sure that he has contacts in Austria. Your brother Mycroft is over there at the moment and confirms that information is being leaked out.
So you think Rivers became aware that you were onto him and that he has skipped the country with your latest plans?
That is what I fear.
I see. Well, if he's been missing for 2 days, he could easily be aboard ship or even across the channel. What does his wife say?
We have not contacted her. She's rarely at his house. The voyage's homes, I don't want to call in the yard. If this can be handled quietly, if you can obtain proof that Rivers has defected, then our men on the continent will know what to do. At the moment, there is simply not enough evidence. Will you consider taking up this investigation and giving it top priority? Please agree, for England's sake.
First, I knew Holmes would say yes, and he lost no time in taking action. The moment Charles left us, Holmes reached for one of his files. He speedily confirmed the background and address of Robert Rivers, and, giving me time for a light luncheon, suggested a short walk round to the Rivers' home in Upper Montague Street. In response to our ringing, the door was opened by an extremely lovely lady, and she was quite obviously the wife we'd been told about.
Yes, can I help you?
I beg your pardon, madame, but am I addressing the wife of Robert Rivers?
I am Irene Rivers, yes.
I am Sherlock Holmes, and this is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you
do? Oh, Mr. Holmes. Well, of course, I have heard of you. Would you care to step inside before stating your business?
You are very kind. Thank you.
Please come this way. I presume that a visit from someone as illustrious as yourself must mean that you wish to ask questions about Robert. Please, won't you both be seated?
Thank you. What makes you assume it's in connection with your husband, Mrs. Rivers?
Because he's the only one who matters here. If it is about Robert, then I must tell you that I know nothing. I haven't seen him in months. I'm only here for a few days to collect some possessions, and then I'm about to sail for the United States.
I see. If you see so little of your husband, then presumably you know nothing of his movements.
Nothing at all. Even when I stayed here permanently and tried to help him, he was totally secretive about where he was going and why.
You have no idea where he is at the moment?
Well, at his office, presumably.
He's not been seen for over 2 days. No one knows where he is. The Admiralty are extremely worried. They fear that he may have met with some misfortune.
Not been seen? Oh, but surely I... Well, I've only just returned here, you understand. I've not even seen the servants. Surely they must know.
Well, I believe they have been questioned and can throw no light on the matter.
I see. Well, I wish I could help. I really do. Oh, dear. I hope this isn't going to complicate matters. You see, Mr. Holmes, I am leaving my husband, this time for good. I'm seeking a divorce and leaving for America, where I hope to marry the man I'm in love with. I don't wish to part from Robert as bad friends.
When are you thinking of leaving?
Well, I have a passage booked on the Ruritania for the day after tomorrow.
I see. Well, then let us hope we have good news for you before then.
Oh, Irene, darling, did you know that... Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't know that you had visitors.
That's quite all right. The gentlemen were about to leave. Let me introduce you. Mr. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson. This is Mr. Douglas Beresford from New York.
A great pleasure to meet you, Mr. Holmes. Your name is well known, even on the other side of the Atlantic.
Oh, that is most gratifying.
Mr. Holmes is here making inquiries about my husband, Douglas. I have told him that having just returned to the house after an absence of some weeks, I know nothing of his whereabouts.
I see. Well, I'm sorry. I can't help you either, Mr. Holmes. Rivers and I hardly know each other.
Well, then it's useless to question you further. May I have a few words with the servants before we leave, Mrs. Rivers?
Yes, of course. Be so good as to ring the bell, please, Douglas.
Yes, sure.
May I leave you my card? You will, of course, get in touch with me if you hear from your husband or can throw any light upon his sudden disappearance.
Yes, of course.
You rang, madame?
Yes, Briggs. Please take these two gentlemen down to the servants' quarters and allow them to question whoever is available. And then be so good as to show them to a carriage.
Very good, ma'am. If you would follow me, gentlemen.
Thank you. Well, good day to you, Mrs. Rivers. Mr. Bettisford.
Good day.
Good day.
Irene. Irene, darling. What do they really want? What did you tell them?
I told them nothing. Except that I'm in love. And I'm going to America to divorce and remarry. That's all, my dear.
Oh,
that's
Irene.
All.
Oh, my dear.
The christening of the servants at Upper Montague Street took very little time. But to my surprise, Holmes asked to be shown out the back way into Montague Mews. He then entered the private coach house.
Yes, I see. The horse and carriage are not here. All seems in order. The hay untouched, unused. It rained yesterday, but there's no evidence of it in here, except... but wait. What is this over here? Look. Blood.
George, you're right, Holmes. Blood. Quite a lot of it. Dried blood. It's not fresh.
Yes, and here there's been quite a violent struggle. The hay, canvas coverings, all buried away. Give me a hand, Watson. Look. A man. A dead man.
Heavens, Holmes. What a sight. This man's been beaten to death.
Yes, it looks as though he's put up a good fight. His hands are much bruised. And then perhaps when he was down, he was struck violently from the back with a heavy instrument. Look, a coachman's wheel hammer. Shot at the base of his skull. It's murder, all right, Watson.
Holmes, is this Robert Rivers, the missing man?
No. I think not, Watson. He's a servant. I should judge from his garb that he's a family coachman. Poor fellow's dead, all right. Well, that means we shall have to bring the police into this case. Can you please use the telephone, Watson? I saw one on the wall inside the hall.
Yes, of course.
Get through to Inspector Lestrade at Scotland Yard. Tell him to come to me or send a man round.
Right.
Meanwhile, I have the opportunity of going over this table before no one else gets here. Now, hurry, Watson, hurry.
Looking for space to hang and dry your washing? Washline distributors have the solution. Their rotating and fold-down washlines take up the smallest spaces. Ideal for townhouses, simplexes and balconies at affordable prices. Galvanized or powder-coated and available in 5 different colors. For 24-hour delivery, installation, reliable and friendly service, phone Washline Distributors on 011-792-2486. That's 011-792-2486. Wash lines for every space and need.
Enjoy the best of both worlds. Only 2 hours' drive from Johannesburg and Pretoria and half an hour by air. The magnificent Sundown Ranch Hotel and Lion Park, just 10 kilometres from the Pilansburg Game Reserve and Sun City Resort. It offers an exciting escape from the hustle and bustle of everyday life. Reasonable rates, excellent food, friendly service and comfortable air-conditioned rooms. It will ensure a memorable stay. Activities include tennis, squash, horse riding, the Lion Park and much, much more. Call now to make your reservation on 014-573-1000. That's 014-573-1000 or visit their website at www.restonations.co.za/Sundown Ranch. The Sundown Ranch Hotel and Lion Park. Two worlds in one.
In less than an hour, Inspector Lestrade had arrived with a police sergeant. Holmes had got the butler to identify the body. It was indeed the coachman, Morgan, who'd been in service to Robert Rivers for so many years. Lestrade made his own examination and agreed with Holmes.
Struck down from behind. Murder, all right.
Yes, I hope you don't think this is too small a matter for you, Lestrade.
This is the home of Robert Rivers, isn't it? He works at the Admiralty. A murder on the premises of anyone employed at such places has serious undercurrents. I see that the horse and carriage are not here. Is it possible that Mr. Rivers has taken them?
Yes, it is possible, but I think you do well to concentrate on this as a straightforward murder, Lestrade.
Well, where do we start? Any ideas?
Oh, yes. Yes, plenty. You're looking for a man of approximately 5'8" tall. He has red hair and he has a tooth missing from the front of his mouth.
Holmes, you aren't serious.
I'm never more so. The coachman, Morgan, put up a good fight. could see the knuckles of his hands and the bruises on his face. He landed several blows to the head of his assailant. Adhered to the blood on his hands were various hairs. I've used tweezers to place them in this envelope. Yes, the hairs, as you will see, are of a rather vivid red.
Yes, all right, Holmes. Carry on.
You'll find there's also a broken tooth in that envelope. I picked it up from the straw. It must have been from the man Morgan was fighting, because Morgan's teeth are all quite intact. Also, on the beam of the stable, there are similar red hairs. That shows that the man was hit and staggered back. His head hit the post at roughly 5.5 feet from the ground. It is reasonable, therefore, to assume that he is a small man. He must have red hair and a beard.
Well, that is something to go on, isn't it?
I think so. There must be hundreds of red-headed men in London, but not many who also have broken front teeth. It narrows down the field somewhat. I think you'll find that the killer is a hired thug, experienced in this field. May I make a final suggestion?
By all means.
Try Limehouse. There is a pub called The Anchor near the river. It's the kind of place where all the seamen gather. There is a so-called gymnasium at the back. I've long suspected it as being a screen for various smuggling activities. If you get a couple of plain clothes men to dress up as rough seamen, they may be able to pick up a lead on the man you're after.
Well, yes, all right. I'll follow through on that, Holmes. Thanks.
After we left Montague Mews, Holmes went back to Baker Street and I took a cab to my surgery. I'd delayed my work long enough. It was now quite dark, but I was able to see the many patients who'd been waiting for me. It was late when I eventually made my way back home.
Ah, Watson. I've been sniffing about in the Limehouse. The Strades men are there, standing out like sore thumbs. They were in the bar of the Anchor, but in a way they helped. They made my own investigations pass quite unnoticed. I found the murderer all right.
Oh, you have? Well, who is the man?
Almost an undesirable creature by the name of Joe Cornfoot. He's a burly, 5'7", has red hair and a front tooth missing. I've advised Scotland Yard and the Strades should call him in for questioning. They should be able to get the truth out of him.
Yes, but Holmes, even if they do get a confession out of this man, will that help you to trace what has happened to Robert Rivers?
Oh, I sincerely hope so, Watson. Well, there must be some connection. An important Admiralty man disappears and his coachman is murdered on the same night? No. There must be a link. It all depends on the Strade. Can he get at the truth? Oh, let's hope so. Oh, well, it's been a long day. I'm forgetting to bed. Good night, Watson.
Good night, Holmes.
Now, come on, Cornfoot. Tell me the truth.
You ain't got nothing on me, Inspector. What makes you think I'm the man you want?
You've got a front tooth missing, haven't you? We've got one that will fit that gap in your mouth exactly.
So what? Lots of seamen have got teeth missing.
How did you come to lose yours?
Well, it must have been 2-3 nights ago. I was mixing it with another bloke in the gym at the back there. A fella called Max Welder. Caught me one in the face, knocked me bleeding tooth down my throat. Yeah, look, that's Welder. Just come in. You can go and ask him if you like.
I will, later on. Tell me where you were last Monday night between the hours of 6 and midnight.
Well, see, I was here most of the time. Yeah. The landlord will bear me out. He'll tell you that I had a bit of grub, a few pints, and then I went round to the gym, had a couple of rounds with the boys, and got my tooth knocked out and came back in here until closing time. As a matter of fact, because of me smelling face, like, I spent the night right here in one of the rooms at the Anchor.
You expect me to believe that?
Well, please yourself. I've got a dozen blokes to back me up. Just hold on, Jiffy. Alf Brown is the landlord. Hey, Alf, come over here. The inspector here is questioning me about where I was on Monday night. He seems to think I ain't telling the truth. You tell him.
Monday? Well, it's seen, Oda. That will be the day you had your tooth knocked out, won't it?
Right.
Yes, you'd had such a nice supper to see to a night, if I recall. Yes. Well, there's Max Welder over there. He's a bloke who copped you one, wasn't
right,
he? Shall I call him?
All right, oh, all right. You're all going to stick together. But I warn you, Alf Brown, this is a serious offence. If you are shielding a murderer lying on his behalf, then you are an accomplice, and you could end by swinging on the end of a rope. Remember that.
The next day was spent in trying to destroy Joe Cornfoot's alibi and continuing the search for Robert Rivers. Both ended in failure. A very frustrated Lestrade called in the late afternoon.
Oh, I just can't move him, Holmes. Can't make the charge stick. He simply says he's innocent, and that's that.
But he is not innocent. He is guilty. I've been fetishing away down at Limehouse, and Joe's pals are perjuring themselves to protect him. He is guilty, and he knows where Robert Rivers is. I'm sure of it.
Well, Holmes, I don't know how we're going to prove that you're right.
Well, I shall have to take active steps myself. There's no time to lose. We move tonight. First, I want you to send off two telegrams for me. One is to Mycroft, wherever he is in Europe. Oh, I think we should be here to take the responsibility. The second is to Sir Charles Drewings. Then I want you to have your men at the ready down at Limehouse, Lestrade. Watson, are you agreeable to accompany me?
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Of course. Then at about 9 o'clock we will journey to Limehouse, suitably clad, of course. I'm sure I can find old clothes that you can get into. A large Inverness cape with big pockets that can contain a revolver or two.
So you think it's going to be dangerous, Holmes?
We're tackling dangerous men. Let's go prepared. Come, let's get started. Now, Lestrade, this is what happened.
And so, on that rainy, windy night, Holmes and I took a cab to the east end of London. We made our way on foot to the Anchor Inn, but we didn't go in. It wasn't all that late. We waited down a side alley. After half an hour, two men left by the back entrance near the gymnasium. By the light of the gas lamps, Holmes identified them as Joe Cornfoot and Alf Brown, the landlord. We followed them swiftly and as silently as possible. They made their way towards the river, and at Luke's Wharf, they stopped and slipped into a small, disused warehouse. Holmes clutched me by the sleeve and guided me through the darkness. Inside, the two men lit a lantern.
There you are. You see, they're kneeling down. Look. About to lift up a wooden trapdoor in the floor.
Yes, but Holmes, what does all this mean?
Sure. You'll find out very soon. Wait.
Waste of time, if you ask me. We know we're safe enough.
Then we've got to check, though. We can't be too careful. Here, give us a hand. No, you take that side. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Right. See, still there. Told you. No chance of anyone discovering him under the floorboards. Mm-hmm. Now, all we have to do is put him in the chest. Come on, now.
Easy, now. That's got it. Right. Close him in.
Right. Now, tomorrow he goes aboard the Seawolf. Once out at sea, the captain drops the chest overboard, and that's that. We settle back and start collecting. Rich blokes, we're going to be nice and rich for the rest of our days.
You know, the cops won't give up. They'll still be asking questions.
Don't let them. There's a lack of evidence. They can't make any accusations. Stick, it's worth taking a few risks.
One risk too many. Don't move. There are two revolvers pointing at you, and both my friend and I are crack shots. Keep them silent, Watson. Let's get this straight in here. I know he's been following us. Why? Yes, well, the game is up for you two. You may have been lucky once, Cornfoot, but you don't need a false alibi for this evening's work. This time you face a charge of murder. The killing of Robert Rivers, whose body you have just placed in that sea chest.
Blasted, you clever swine. How do you ever find out?
You'll have plenty of time for puzzling out the answers when we have you behind bars.
Holmes, Watson. I take it you're all right.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with us. But our friends here have a lot of explaining to do. You'll find the dead body of Robert Rivers in that sea chest. Take these men away, and then...
All right,
I think we can make another arrest. A bigger fish this time. These are just two sprats to catch mackerel. Come, Watson. They're still important with you.
Holmes and I left Lestrade in charge and took a waiting carriage back to Baker Street. There, we hastily changed from our old clothes, washed ourselves as cleanly and speedily as possible, and at exactly midnight, while the chimes of Big Ben ran out over the city, I heard someone pull our doorbell. It was Sir Charles Drewing. Holmes' welcome was most cool.
I have to report that my case is closed, Drewing. The body of Robert Rivers has been discovered. Thank you for answering my telegram by keeping this appointment, but you must have known that to stay away would have been more condemning than to face my accusations.
I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, but I think you do. You have been responsible for all of this, haven't you? You are the traitor who has been selling secrets abroad. The secrets of the Admiralty, new improved armory on our warships. You knew Mycroft might easily discover the leakage and who was responsible. So thinking to throw him off the scent, you turned to me. But you have already committed the major crime, hiring Joe Cornfoot to abduct Rivers. Then you wish to plant further evidence of his treachery by sending Cornford back into River's house with enemy correspondence. But the coachman intervened. He was killed. Cornford fled. And you had Rivers killed and his body made ready for a final disappearance at sea.
You will have to prove all this.
Oh, yes. I certainly shall be able to do so. In your case, there is no lack of evidence. Would you care for a glass of brandy while we wait for Scotland Yard? They won't be long.
Charles Doings remained quite silent. He refused to make any sort of statement when Lestrade and his men arrived to take him away. Joe Cornford and Alf Brown were arrested on charges of murder, and Holmes lost interest in the case completely. It was over a week later when we were sitting at breakfast.
Yes, I see two items of undoubted interest to you, Watson. One is the sudden death of Sir Charles Druings of a supposed heart attack. How convenient. Well, we won't bother to question that. The other is that Mrs. Irene Rivers has now become Mrs. Douglas Beresford after hearing of the death of her first husband, Robert Rivers. Well, I trust you have an uneventful day today, Watson. I certainly intend to do so.
Listen again next Sunday to The Stories of Sherlock Holmes, with Graham Armitage as Holmes and Kerry Jordan as Dr. Watson.